This is the Capital Literature Podcast, bringing you investment letters and audio. The Capital Literature Podcast is a CEBITS capital service for the investment community. This podcast is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be relied upon as a basis for investment decisions. All rights belong to the respective owners.
River Park Large Growth Fund, First Quarter, 2022. First Quarter 2022 Performance Summary. Given the extreme volatility and our significant losses this quarter, we thought it best to lead off this quarter's letter with two observations. Our current portfolio represents one of the most exciting groups of growth businesses that we have ever owned, and the portfolio trades at one of the widest gaps to intrinsic value that we have ever seen. Now, on to a more in-depth review of our recent performance. The first quarter of 2022 was a difficult one for our fund. Over this year's first 3 months, the River Park Large Growth Fund, the fund, lost 19.6%, our worst quarterly period since inception and substantially worse than the more tepid declines suffered by the S&P 500 and the Russell 1000 growth indices during this period, down 4.6% and 9.0%, respectively. This quarter continued a period of subpar performance that began in the middle of last year, during which many emerging large-cap growth firms have come under consistent and significant pressure. Although many of these companies were COVID winners that helped propel strong results for the fund in 2H20, and remain amongst the most exciting growth businesses we own, investors have aggressively rotated away from these, and many other, high-growth names in a risk-off reaction to the current macro and geopolitical landscape. Rather than follow the market's so-called de-risking strategy, we leaned into our higher-growth positions, in some cases materially, at what we believe to be generationally attractive prices. In addition, we brought new high-conviction research ideas out of our pantry and into the portfolio at prices that we believe to be particularly compelling. This quarter, our new additions included long-time growth leaders Netflix and Nvidia, both of which were under substantial pressure during the quarter, as well as healthcare services firm Teladoc, whose stock price had fallen precipitously from its mid-COVID high. Each of these firms has long been on our watch list, and we found each of their valuations particularly compelling during the recent downdraft. We highlight these newer positions, as well as the impressive fundamentals throughout our portfolio in more detail below. To date, it is fair to say that this shift has been too early, as prices, in many instances, have weakened further. Nevertheless, we believe the prices at which we acquired our positions represent extremely attractive entry points that will, over time, provide substantial long-term returns for our shareholders. Given the impressive fundamentals throughout the portfolio, our current holdings now represent the highest revenue and earnings growth portfolio that we have owned since the fund's inception in 2009. And, following this quarter's sell-off, it also represents the most attractively valued portfolio we have ever owned relative to expected future earnings and free cash flow. It is not often that one gets to buy wonderful businesses at wonderful prices, and we believe this to be one of those times. While we are deeply disappointed by our recent losses, we believe that we are currently invested in an exceptional risk-reward portfolio and look forward to strong absolute and relative returns in the quarters to come. Strategy review. Given that, in most normal markets, it is rare to find many wonderful companies that trade at distressed prices, thoughtful long-term investors generally focus on one of two strategies: deep value or high quality. Deep value investors typically focus on finding companies that trade at a wonderful price, at a price far below a normal multiple of the company's earnings or net asset/book value. This strategy is built on the expectation that if a business and its stock price are both currently depressed, should the business find stability or recover, the multiple will move higher. Many of the staunchest of these investors would be more than happy to buy a cigar butt at a cheap price as long as it has a puff or two left in it. In contrast, high-quality investors focus on finding wonderful companies and buying them at a reasonable price. Most of these investors define a wonderful company as one that is highly profitable, expertly managed, and has a durable competitive advantage. These investors have a distinct preference for investing in businesses with strong fundamentals and avoid those that are structurally unsound, even if they are cheap by some metrics. Quality-focused investors expect to generate strong compounding returns driven by the ever-growing piles of cash that the business generates rather than by simply selling at a higher valuation when/if the business reprices closer to its historical average. While this strategy may require a longer wait, the weight of the cash being generated by the business will eventually generate attractive returns and overcome any debate about valuation. Interestingly, when reflecting on this choice, many of the most famous and successful investors who started out in the deep value camp eventually gravitated to the quality team as they concluded that a great business at a fair price is superior to a fair business at a great price. Finding the really outstanding companies and staying with them through all the fluctuations of a gyrating market proved far more profitable to far more people than did the more colorful practice of trying to buy them cheap and sell them dear. Philip Fisher. Observation over many years has taught us that the chief losses to investors come from the purchase of low-quality securities at times of favorable business conditions. Benjamin Graham. Quality matters, in businesses and in people. Better quality businesses are more likely to grow and compound cash flow. Low-quality businesses often erode, and even superior managers, who are difficult to identify, attract, and retain, may not be enough to save them. Seth Klarman. Occasionally, however, the best of all worlds for investing does arrive, where we have that rare chance to buy wonderful companies at wonderful prices. Unfortunately, these moments are usually short-lived and often require that one act, or avoid reacting poorly and selling at a distressed price, when fear is raging across the world or in a particular segment of the market. Over just the past few years, terrorist attacks, banking crises, and global pandemics certainly generated enough fear to cause even wonderful businesses to go on sale. As did the dot-com sell-off, the flash crash, the LTCM unwind, the summer of Brexit, and the last time the Fed embarked on a tightening cycle, 4Q18. In fact, when using hindsight, which is always 20/20, one can find plenty of instances where you can look back and kick yourself for not buying, or buying more, of a wonderful business in the midst of a material sell-off, in the market as a whole or just in a specific sector or security, that went on to spectacular later returns, such as Amazon at a split-adjusted $1.2002 after the dot-com crash, Blackstone at $6, in mid-2009 during the financial crisis, or Apple at $35, in early 2018 following the last Fed tantrum. We view the current carnage across our long book, and much of the NASDAQ, as offering a similar window of opportunity, that we do not expect to remain open for long, to own wonderful businesses that have been marked down to wonderful prices. Current fears. The current tantrum in the stocks of high-growth companies has resulted from a series of investor macro concerns that we believe to be misplaced. Interest rates and inflation. The primary culprit in recent months has been the hyperfocus of traders and pundits on the certainty that inflation will stay elevated, that interest rates will rise significantly, and that this environment will be difficult for growth stocks, which should thus be sold. This narrative is based, in large part, on the financial theory that long-duration assets, of which growth stocks are included, will see their multiples contract with rising rates. Our belief is somewhat different. Not only are we less sure that current trends will continue, we are more of the opinion that inflation rates will normalize over the next few quarters as COVID stimulus and supply chain disruptions dissipate, but we are also not convinced that these headwinds will predominantly impact growth stocks. First, we believe that infotech and other growth stocks have been amongst the market's biggest winners over the last 5 to 10 years because they led the economy, with market-leading and exponential revenue and cash flow growth. That growth was driven by offering better and more convenient products and services at more competitive prices, not because of any macroeconomic factor or Fed policy. We believe that these businesses, and many of the younger and emerging franchises that we have recently acquired, will similarly lead the economy, and the stock market, for years to come, regardless of interest rates or macro trends, if they continue their market share taking momentum. Secular trends and innovation-driven growth have always been relatively immune to interest rate and business cycles. In fact, these trends and market share changes often accelerate during more challenging economic times. It is also important to recognize that those companies with high-demand products and services are the ones, and often the only ones, that can pass cost increases on to customers, as most innovative tech companies have already been doing for years given the ever-rising costs of tech talent over the past decade. If inflation does stay elevated, it is only those companies that are able to grow revenue and earnings well in excess of the rate of inflation that will allow investors' capital returns to keep pace. Given these features, market-leading secular growth companies have often emerged from past inflationary periods with more than enough incrementally higher revenue, earnings, and cash flow growth to offset the impact of applying a higher discount rate to future cash flows. We believe this current environment will prove the same. Conversely, it has been those slower growth companies facing secular headwinds, especially those with large debt balances, that suffer the most from inflationary pressures as they are unable to offset cost increases with higher prices, resulting in contracting margins. And, if levered with significant debt, as many mature, slow growth companies often are, these price takers also suffer earnings pressure from higher interest charges. To us, It is these companies that should be avoided in a higher inflation/higher rate environment. Ukraine. The geopolitical uncertainty associated with the invasion of Ukraine, and its impact on humanity, is troublesome on many levels. However, not unlike COVID, we do not believe that most secular growth companies will be materially impacted by the disruption. Neither Russia, nor the Ukraine, represent significant end markets or parts of the supply chain for any of our businesses. And we don't believe the war, even if it drags on, will have a significant long-term impact on the arc of technology and innovation adoption across our company's markets. As distressing as the conflict in the Ukraine is, unless it morphs into something significantly more global, we are of the opinion that this conflict will not be particularly important in the revenue and earnings path of most of our businesses. Recession. Many pundits now point to the threat of a recession in 2023 or sooner, an opinion we do not share. One should keep in mind, however, that recessions, like market corrections, are not abnormal. We assume every business we invest in will have to manage through one or more recessionary periods during our investment cycle. Secular growth companies generally power right through these periods as they often take even more market share in difficult economies than in thriving ones as customers more rapidly shed higher-priced and less convenient products and services. Also, many of the businesses we own offer important new staples to their customers, the products and services the customers cannot live without. These include consumer-facing businesses such as Amazon, Netflix, the social media companies, Apple, Google, and Uber, as well as the new cloud software platforms such as Microsoft, Adobe, RingCentral, Twilio, and Autodesk. We believe that many consumers would likely look elsewhere for savings rather than turn off any of these services. Again, it is the legacy vendors of share-losing products and services that are more at risk from a tougher economic backdrop. Our focus. Rather than focusing on the above, or other macro, topics, which we believe will all be old news in relatively short order, we have positioned our portfolio to profit from a much different set of forces that we believe to be both structural and materially more powerful. As highlighted in our recent letters, we continue to believe that we are in the midst of a generational shift in our economy and society driven by innovation and digital technologies. These are massive forces that are stimulating growth while at the same time accelerating productivity, increasing convenience, lowering costs, and causing the competitive destruction of the incumbents that fail to adapt. Importantly, these forces also have longer-term deflationary impacts which had already been contributing to the very low inflation levels we have enjoyed for the past few decades, and is another reason we believe that the recent jump in prices will be short-lived. We believe that all companies must embrace and adapt to these creative and destructive forces to survive, much less thrive. It is our view that those who lead these transformations will take material market share from those that fail to adapt, and this has been the foundation for much of our research and investing focus for the past several years. It has been our strategy to time and again use market volatility in recent years to pivot into larger positions in those companies that we believe will be the winners of this shift at the attractive prices often offered during these swift market-wide drawdowns. Wonderful businesses. Despite the above market-wide concerns, and in stark contrast to our investment performance, the business fundamentals across our portfolio have remained exceptional. In nearly all cases across the portfolio, we raised our projections for longer-term revenue and earnings growth and, most importantly, free cash flow generation following our company's latest earnings reports. According to our models, each of our holdings is on a path to double-digit compounding revenue growth with expanding margins and substantial free cash generation over the coming 5 to 10 years, growth rates that we expect to be durable and sustainable. In addition, nearly all our portfolio companies also sport cash-rich balance sheets with little if any net debt and impressive ratios of operating cash generation compared with expected CapEx needs. This means that these businesses are both self-funding and are, or will soon be, in a position to, among other things, return material amounts of excess cash to shareholders, especially if their shares remain depressed. In fact, we believe the majority, if not most, of our holdings are already, or will soon become 20 for 20s, businesses that can grow in excess of 20% per year for at least 20 years. Over the course of time, it is these businesses that have generated the vast majority of each decade's market-wide investment returns. Finding and owning them through their period of market dominance remains the north star of our investment process. Below is a list of our current portfolio highlighting each company's revenue growth over the past 5 years, which, across the portfolio, averaged an impressive 33% compound annual rate, along with their most recent quarter's growth, averaging 31% year over year, and the growth we expect for the next 5 years, averaging 21%, more than 5x the growth expected in the S&P 500. Wonderful prices. Even at peak prices for our fund during the middle of last year, our projections of company earnings and cash flows supported our hurdle of doubling our, and your, money in every holding within 5 years. At today's lower prices, based on what are, in most cases, substantially higher earnings projections, we believe the returns can be far greater. While periods of downside volatility can certainly test one's resolve, they also, invariably create amazing investment opportunities as many a baby is thrown out with the bathwater. Hence some of the market's most colorful expressions have come from those that have profited handsomely from ignoring the crowd and investing with a contrarian approach. Buy when there's blood in the streets. Nathan Rothschild. Buy on the cannons. John Neff. The time of maximum pessimism is the best time to buy. John Templeton. When everyone comes to the same conclusion, that conclusion is just about always wrong. David Dreeman. We believe this to be one of those times where one should be greedy when others are fearful. Our current portfolio on forward earnings trades at a substantial discount to the overall market's valuation while offering substantially higher growth. In fact, a much larger than average portion of our portfolio currently trades at a single-digit multiple of our estimate for 2027 earnings. We generally use earnings 4 to 5 years out to calculate whether we can conservatively make a double, for businesses that we still believe to be very early in their growth stages. If we are even close to correct in our analysis of these companies' earnings potential, the returns from their stocks from current levels should be significant. In sum, while we are always disturbed by any significant mark-to-market losses, we believe our current positioning offers us one of those unique opportunities to buy wonderful businesses at wonderful prices. We remain of the opinion that the market's concerns of the moment will evolve, as they always do, along with the market's pessimistic mood towards growth stocks. We also remain confident that, over the long term, it is the eventual scale of each individual company's revenue, earnings, and cash flow, and not market sentiment, that ultimately drives shareholder returns. Given that we own an extremely high-growth portfolio of extremely innovative and well-positioned companies, now priced at extremely attractive levels, if we are right about their growth path, we believe our portfolio will not only recoup our recent losses but also recover our earlier rate of compounding. Both our, the principals at River Park are large investors in the fund, and we have recently taken advantage of this opportunity to add to our substantial holdings, and your capital at attractive rates in the years ahead. New positions. Netflix is the global streaming TV leader and is more than twice the size of each of Hulu, Amazon Prime Video and Disney+. And yet, with an estimated 800 million plus global pay TV subscribers, excluding China, yet to adopt streaming, we believe Netflix still has a large runway for continued subscriber growth. In addition to its growth opportunities in traditional TV and movie streaming, the company also recently launched a mobile gaming service that opens an additional $100 billion plus market for future growth. Netflix has spent over a decade building its global footprint of subscribers as well as its now deep library of both global and local content and is now transitioning to growing margins and free cash flow generation. We believe that 2022 is an inflection year for Netflix as management has stated that the company should finally become and then remain FCF positive for the foreseeable future. A combination of price increases and a stabilization of content investments should position the company to continue its mid-teens annual revenue growth while driving improved operating margin to north of 30% over the next few years. Revenue grew 19% for 2021 and operating margin was 21%, up from 10% in 2018. We also believe that the stabilization of content spend should allow the company to materially scale its annual free cash flow, which can be used to retire debt, accelerate growth and/or return to shareholders. We took advantage of the over 50% drop in the company's shares over the last several months to initiate a small position in this world-class innovative growth leader. NVIDIA is the leading designer of graphics processing chips, commonly known as GPUs, graphics processing units, required for powerful computer processing. Over the past 20 years, the company has evolved through innovation and adaptation from a predominantly gaming-focused chip vendor to one of the largest semiconductor/software vendors in the world, dominating the core secular growth markets of gaming, data centers and professional visualization. Over the past decade, the company has grown revenue at a compound annual rate of over 20% while expanding operating margins and, through its asset-light business model, producing ever-increasing amounts of free cash flow. For 2021, the company generated 61% revenue growth to $27 billion, expanded its EBITDA margins to over 44% and generated over $8 billion of free cash flow. Over the past 5 years, the company has generated a cumulative $23 billion of FCF after cumulative capital expenditures of less than $4 billion. We expect future growth to remain robust as NVIDIA chips and software are critical to many of the core technologies being adopted globally, including cloud computing, virtual reality and advanced artificial intelligence. As with NFLX, we took advantage of the over 40% drop in the company's shares over the last several months to initiate a small position. Teladoc is the largest telehealth provider in the US and has recently begun to expand. Internationally, Doc's platform enables an ever-expanding list of patient-doctor interactions, including those for primary health care, mental health issues and chronic condition management, to transition from an on-site visit to one that can be done remotely with full video-based interaction. Doc provides its platform of services on both a business-to-business and direct-to-consumer basis, through monthly subscription-based relationships. For its core business-to-business clients, the company contracts with a wide range of entities, including large-scale employers. The company currently contracts with over 50% of the Fortune 500, health plans, health systems, and medical insurance companies, which currently cover more than 50 million members. For these customers, the company provides a win-win-win, as patients spend no time traveling and less time waiting, doctors are more efficient seeing more patients in less time, and payers, employers and plan sponsors, save money while being able to offer a highly popular additional benefit for their employees. This B2B market is projected to be a plus $100 billion market opportunity and Doc is the clear global market leader. For its direct-to-consumer clients, the company provides a growing suite of services for individuals to have affordable access to on-demand and scheduled medical services, for which their current insurance does not provide reimbursement, such as extended mental health counseling. Although the company has been growing steadily for well over a decade, the business has transformed over the past few years as the COVID pandemic caused a significant increase in the demand for virtual healthcare. In addition, the company's 2020 acquisitions of Livongo, the leader in virtual chronic condition management, and InTouch, a competitive telehealth platform, materially broadened the company's product offerings. At its recent Analyst Day, management guided to 25-30% top-line growth for each of the next 3 years and expects to exit 2024 with more than $4 billion in annual revenue. The company also anticipates expanding margins by 100-150 basis points per year in each of the next 3 years, while still accelerating its investments in marketing and R&D. As with many of our recent purchases, we took advantage of the decline in the company's shares, down a breathtaking 70% from its 2021 high of almost $300 per share, to establish a small position in Teladoc. Portfolio review. Top detractors from performance for the quarter ended March 31, 2022. RingCentral Incorporated. Farfetch Limited. SoFi Technologies Incorporated. Shopify Incorporated. Meta Platforms Incorporated. Top 10 Holdings. The below charts depict the top 10 holdings as of the end of the quarter. Amazon.com Incorporated. Uber Technologies Incorporated. Alphabet Incorporated. Blackstone Incorporated. Snap Incorporated. The Charles Schwab Corporation. Apple Incorporated. Shopify Incorporated. Microsoft Corporation. Twilio Incorporated. Summary. We believe that our portfolio is comprised of an exciting group of companies that are attractively valued, are benefiting from strong secular growth trends and are poised to generate substantial and growing excess cash flow in the years to come. We believe that this bodes well for our future absolute and relative returns. We will continue to keep you apprised of our process and portfolio holdings through these quarterly letters and welcome your feedback. Please do not hesitate to contact us if you have any questions or comments about anything we have written or about any of our other strategies. We thank you for your interest in the RiverPark Large Growth Fund. Sincerely, Mitch Rubin, Portfolio Manager and Chief Investment Officer.